You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barron, and I am your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practice all over. And man, do I have a treat for you. I have got Dr. Jim McKee, and you're going to love it. Not only is he a great guy, awesome teacher, great thinker, and he's going to give us a new way to think and look at occlusion for the long term in restorative dentistry. And he's joining us from Spear Education out there. And so I am super, super pumped. Now, a couple things. I love doing this, and we started doing this a couple of years back. We had our COVID conference, and so if you're finding yourself here with the podcast for the first time, because a lot of young dentists and dental students joined recently in the last year, over 38,000 of you. Gosh, we do all these videos. You guys don't watch them, but you download the audios, and I'm totally cool with that. So if you're listening on Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you're consuming podcasts, do me a favor. Go down to that little subscribe button. See that? And just click it, because I want you to keep showing up, because you're going to see you're part of a community of just good people trying to learn great stuff and learn more about dentistry so you can create a better practice and better life. And I don't want you to miss out. So make sure you subscribe. Secondly, if you haven't joined our private Facebook group, which is called Best Practices Powered by ACT Dental, make sure you check that out, because we started that. It's been almost about a year now, or a little bit less than a year, and over 13,000 of you joined, and it's just one place to see what's going on in dentistry and be able to ask great questions and connect with other people that are trying to do the same thing in their practices. So make sure you check that out. And then lastly, some of you are thinking, gosh, I just want to create a little bit of a better practice or a better life, and I own my own practice, and maybe it's not the best, or maybe I'm having a little challenge with my culture, or I just got to find a way to make this a little bit easier. And if you're stuck, feel free to reach out to us at actdental.com. We're practice coaches. We're just here to help you think a little bit better about how you own your business, create a better culture, a little bit more profitability maybe, and just enjoy your life. So make sure you check that out. And speaking of enjoying your life, I got to introduce my guest. Now, Jim, you're near and dear to my heart, because you're one of those guys, when I look back at my past, and I almost quit this profession like 12 times when I was early on, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I remember, now I'm going to tell this story, and then I want you to tell people who you are, but a lot of people don't know this. So when I was first getting started, I was probably, 26, 27, and I knew I had to become a speaker. And one of the first, and this is either the first or second speaking gig I had like no money. So I flew into Chicago. This guy picks me up in this car. It's me and Dr. Greg Territory. He goes, get in here. Nicest guy ever. Takes us out to eat. And I'm like shaking. I'm nervous. I wet my pants like twice already. And then you're going to be fine. And then you kind of like hooked me up, got me going. And it was at Maggiano's. Remember that in Chicago?
I do remember that.
I was terrified, and I was trying to be as confident as I could at dinner without like letting my hands shake and all that kind of stuff. And that was a long time ago, and I'm forever grateful for your belief in me and just giving me a little confidence and kind of kicking me in the butt and getting me going. Now, I know who you are. This morning, I had the great Bill Robbins and Jim Otten on doing a whole thing on global diagnosis, which was spectacular. And they were tossing around this name, Jim McKee, Jim McKee. I'm like, oh, everybody's got a Jim McKee story. Now I have them. Bill's got them. Jim's got them. But if somebody's watching or listening and they don't know who Dr. Jim McKee is, give us a little background. Who are you? What do you do?
Well, thanks so much for having me, Kirk. This is a real treat to be on this program, and I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I'm a restorative dentist. I got out of dental school, and I bought a small practice in a southwest suburb of Chicago. First day in practice, I did an amalgam buildup on number 19, and I did an endo on number 14 at 4 o'clock. I saw two patients. The amalgam buildup patient's still a patient in the practice, and the endo patient is why I don't do endo. But it was a small practice. It was a slow practice. It was a hobby practice that the woman had before me. And I practiced for 3 or 4 years, and I realized I didn't know enough about occlusion. And I had the wonderful fortune to meet Pete Dawson. And a year later, I met Mark Piper. And then I met Greg Tarantola, and I met you when I started at the Pankey Institute. So really, I'm just basically a neighborhood dentist whose practice has kind of developed from a restorative aspect. But I really realized that occlusion was the weak link for most dentists, because it's what we come out of dental school with, being the most, we're not confident in it. We see occlusal problems and we're not totally sure what to do with them. So I wanted to start to get more confident at it, and I just started to try and learn from the best people who are out there. I ended up starting to help at the Dawson Center. It was a wonderful experience. I had a great time with Pete and with Witt and Glenn and John Cranham. And I also taught at the Pankey Institute, and Mark Piper and I teach together, and now I'm out at Spear. So I'm having a wonderful time. I'm still in private practice, and I have a busy restorative practice. I see a lot of patients with joint problems, but I'm a restorative dentist. I'm not an orofacial pain dentist. I'm not a TMD patient or dentist, but I do see a lot of TMD patients, because the average restorative dentist sees a lot of TMD patients. Right. So that's a little bit about me. So that's kind of how I'm at. I love what I do. It's a wonderful phase of life. So I'm really happy with dentistry.
Yeah. And you guys are going to see, he's a great teacher. Now, Jim, I want you to talk about the why. And let me prompt you with a question. I'm a young dentist. I'm like, I don't know if I need a, you've heard this. I don't know if I need a more occlusion training. I mean, go there. Why is occlusion such an important conversation now more than ever?
Because so many of the patients that sit in our chair have occlusal problems. But here's the problem, Kirk. When that young dentist talks about occlusion, what they're typically talking about is how the teeth fit together. Because as dentists, that's how we define occlusion. That's not reality, though. Because ultimately, you think about it, really it's how the lower jaw fits to the upper jaw. So we've got the teeth is one area of contact, but we also have the right joint and we also have the left joint. So really what we have is a tripod that has to fit together against the maxilla. And we've got three areas of contact. We traditionally have only looked at one of those areas of contact. We thought that joints were relatively normal, so we didn't have to worry about it. 3D imaging, and really, I have to credit Mark Piper for this, because Mark was the first person that showed me an MRI back in 1990, and it changed the way I thought about occlusion, because I started thinking not just at the tooth level, but at the joint level. And really, I think we've had the thought process backwards. The discussion was always, does an uneven bite cause a change in the joint? Because typically, it might cause us to clench our teeth. We might start to brux. The muscles would pull on the disc, and eventually, the disc would displace. What I've learned over the years is that I think we have to look at the other way around. I think many times, the occlusions that we see are the result of structural changes in the joint. So we always thought that if you had a bad bite, that would cause a bad joint. I think the clinical reality today, and I know it from imaging, is that really if you have a bad joint, you're going to have a bad bite. There was just an article published in Cranio in January of this year that talked about if you have a malocclusion, your odds increase that you have structural changes at the joint. So we're really starting to get a better handle on it. And that's why I think we need to take a new look at occlusion. Because I will tell you, if as a restorative dentist, you can gain confidence in occlusion, not only at the tooth level, but at the joint level, your practice will explode.
Yeah.
From a practice management position, our new patient calls are over the top, and we do nothing to market.
Yeah.
There's dentists in every community looking for patients for dentists to treat these patients.
Yeah.
Why not become that person? You're seeing the patients anyway.
Totally agree. I'm going to piggyback on that and go back to, you know, young dentists always say, well, I want to practice fee for service. And you always see the same thing. It's not about writing a letter. Like, you got to get good at something. And Jim, you become excellent at something where people are searching you out. Now, I didn't ask you this before we went live, but you've been looking at joints for a long time. Are joints changing? And, you know, we talk about the all the stress people are experiencing now. From your vantage point, is this a moving target in some respect? You know, the anatomy and forces.
We, you know, really what we're seeing, you know, and I was really lucky because, again, I kind of get in at the ground floor of MRIs. MRIs came out in the late 80s, and I heard Mark speak in 1990, and I went home and I started imaging because it made sense. So I've imaged for a long time. I absolutely believe two things. There are more structural changes in the joints than as a profession, we believe. The numbers, we were taught it was 5 to 10% of the people might have had significant intercapsular problems. The number's at least a third. The other thing is that really, in order to gain confidence at the restorative level, I think we have to understand the joints. And that's really, I think, where the young dentist, the quicker they can get on that knowledge base, the easier it's going to be for them to get confident doing, you know, the more typical cases that we want to do. You know, you said, if you want to have a fee-for-service practice, Pete Dawson was the one who told me this many years ago. There has to be a reason why people are going to come to you, other than your insurance, other than the times you're open. They have to come to you for a clinical reason. And when Pete told me that, occlusion was the clinical reason. You know, it's interesting. Today, you know, everyone wanted to be an aesthetic dentist. Everyone wants to be an airway dentist. Everyone wants to do implants. No one wants to do joints. And yet, if you have an airway case, if you have an aesthetic case, if you have an implant case, we have to know the condition of the joints in order to be able to treatment plan predictably.
Yeah.
You know, in my office, the bulk of my production is done on those types of cases. So the joints are always going to be a part of that. That's why I think if we can just make that part of our discussion, your practices will change immediately.
Yeah. And would you agree with this? I mean, the science shows people are going to be living longer. No matter how good you are as a dentist, I saw you teach at Dawson. And one of the things that I had an epiphany was managing forces. Like that was the first time I'd ever heard that. Like, no matter how great this is, you still have to manage forces for the length of a patient's lifetime. Right.
And, you know, ultimately, if you think about it, really the force comes from the muscles. The muscles are positioned between the joints and the teeth. The force is going to be distributed between the joints and the teeth. Here's the problem. The jaw joint, we don't think about it like an orthopedic joint, but in essence, that's what it is. And if we really think about it, it's the first orthopedic joint that's injured in life. People don't tear their ACL when they're 3 years old. People don't tear their rotator cuff when they're 3 years old. People do fall out of the tub and hit their chin on the tub and start to injure a ligament, though, when they're 3 years old at the jaw joint. They fall off a bike when they're five. Now, you can't trace everything to an injury to the joint, but if you ask the right questions, kind of like, you know, I know you talked about having Tracy Gwynn on for airway. It's about asking the right questions. It's the same thing about jaw joints.
Yeah.
We need to ask the right questions. And once we start to do that, we can start to unpeel the onion and the layers start to make a lot more sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so when you're out this weekend teaching at Spear, you get a lot of great young dentists that come to see you, and you know, they're all asked, what do you think they get wrong most as they start to go down this path? And you're talking to them and listening to them.
I think it's the same thing that I got wrong. I was afraid the patient would say no. I didn't have the confidence in it. I was scared presenting. You know, the first time I presented an MRI, I almost sweated through my scrubs because, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to read it. I didn't know how to order it. But once you just get into the system, you start to realize that patients are going to say yes, because ultimately, I think patients want two things. They want answers and they want options.
Yeah.
And today, with occlusion, I can't give them answers or options if I only know one of the three parts of the system.
Right.
That's too unpredictable. If I do know all three parts of the system and I can see the anatomy, then I can give them answers. And really what it does, it allows me to have a prognosis discussion with them that's a realistic prognosis discussion based on anatomy, not based on whether I think I can get the muscle to shut off and hopefully I adjust the splint so it's perfect. You got to do that too. But ultimately, you got to know the anatomy of the forces that you're distributing it on.
Right.
Same way with teeth. If I have weak teeth, it's going to be hard to distribute the load. If I have weak joints, it's going to be hard to distribute the load. We can see the teeth. I want to see the joints. That's
right.
Why MRI and CT together, because MRI gives soft tissue and CT gives hard tissue, I think is the key to that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question.
Yeah. And
Bill Robbins says there's never, with what we have with imaging now, there's never been a more exciting time to be a dentist. Like, you can see more now than ever with these joints. You know, if you've ever worked with Henry, if any dentist ever worked with Henry and you used to, dissect joints and all, like, that was brilliant work, but it was also like, it was hard work to figure out type of a thing, you know?
Henry Gurman and I were great friends. I miss Henry. He was a one of a kind type of guy. I had him out to my study club for joint dissection. And then I did a joint dissection in 2012 with him at the ADA meeting with Mark Piper. They both taught that together. It was a wonderful learning experience. But, you know, the problem is we can't dissect our patients.
Right.
I mean, so the way we see it three-dimensionally is with imaging. You know, it's funny. There's a resistance to imaging in dentistry. But, we image everything else in dentistry. I don't think today you put implants in without taking a CBCT scan to know the bone anatomy. I've always said that, implants are going to drag people to joints because ultimately when you take the CBCT, you're going to see the joint issues. But the problem is many times if you only rely on CBCT, what we miss are the young cases.
Right.
We miss the growing patients. And kind of the way my good friend Jeff Rouse talks about airway, the kid shouldn't snore. I'm going to tell you, kids shouldn't click either. And if there's a clicking joint in a 12-year-old, to me, that warrants a little more of a closer evaluation. So I'm going to share Jeff's passion for treating young, as well as Tracy's that we talked about for treating young. I think we need to be looking at joints younger too, because so many of the growth problems that we see, specifically the class two occlusions, many times are the result of structurally altered joints where the mandible doesn't grow. And that's why the occlusion's class two.
Yeah.
There's a lot of discussion. Are class two occlusions genetically based? Genetics is going to play a huge role in facial growth and development. But I really believe that joint condition is going to be one of the primary factors that determine the occlusion of the teeth. And when we start to take a look at occlusion, the discussion becomes, how do we evaluate the bite? Is it just their natural bite, or do we check it in a skeletal position? So that leads to a discussion about diagnosis, but that's really, I think, where we need to start looking in terms of moving the profession forward when we take a look at occlusion.
Yeah, you're seeing these cases a lot younger now, more than ever. Really? Give us an idea of how you're seeing.
9, 10, 12.
Wow.
And it's females 8 to 1. Females have a higher incidence of joint-based issues because they have a weaker ligament system.
8 to 1?
Yeah, my new patient flow, Kirk, is probably 8 to 1 females to males.
Wow.
Yeah, it's here's the easy question. So three questions. What percentage of your practice is made up of having a woman in the chair? What percentage of time are you treating a woman? The answer is typically 2/3 to 3/4. The second question is, out of those women, how many are class two or have been treated for a class two bite occlusion with headgear, with 4x extraction, with maxillary extraction, with a Herbst, because, or some type of anterior repositioning appliance to try and, quote, recapture the disc? All those are orthodontic treatment options that we use to try and correct a class two occlusion.
Right.
My belief is that many of those class two occlusions occur for one of two reasons. Either we lost dimension at the joint level because the disc came off and the bone changed, but I think more likely the disc came off when they were growing and they never grew to normal. That's, I think, the more common thing that we see. I don't think we see as much degenerative joint disease as we see developmental joint disease. That's the problem.
Right.
We're seeing patients that aren't growing.
Right.
And one of the easiest ways to look at that on a CT scan is simply to measure the ramus length. Mark Piper's talked about this for years. If you have a ramus length that's shorter than 65 millimeters, let's draw out an average number. If you see something in the 50s in an adult, they didn't grow.
Yeah.
It's possible that they may have lost 10 millimeters, but that's a lot of bone to lose.
Yeah.
The likelihood is they never got there.
Yeah, you're privy to so many of these conversations. And you mentioned Drew McDonald and Becca Bacow. You know all these people. And a lot of the conversation is how palates are changing. Tell us from your perspective, is there a relationship between the palate and the joint? Obviously, but like what changes are you seeing? And is there a relationship from your perspective in that as you look at restorative dentistry?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it gets down to the fact because dentistry has always kind of been a yes-no thing. Is it the mandible? Is it the maxilla? I've kind of learned to think as I've gotten older that it's more of a system.
Yes.
And if you look at the literature, we have always thought that if you had a structural change at the joint level, it would have a potential negative net impact on mandibular growth. The problem is what we know in the literature, we just never read it closely, is that it's not only the mandible, it's the maxilla as well. And again, I can show you cases where when you measure from the back of the joint socket to the mesial contact of the first molar on one side versus the other, the side with the injured joint is the side that doesn't grow as well. So many times the unilateral cases we see are some of the best cases, because it kind of gives us control if you've got one good joint and one bad joint to what growth should be.
Right.
So I think we need to stop thinking, is it mandible? Is it maxilla? It's both.
Right.
It's both.
Right.
And therefore, we kind of have to look at both today.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Now, I want you to dispel this rumor. And again, I'm kind of leading you with this question.
Sure.
Because we're talking about the technical side of occlusion and being an expert in this area in dentistry. And oftentimes these patients that come to a practice like this are unfairly categorized as like crazy type patients. That is not true. You know, you have to have a good balance of behavioral and understanding of the technical. What have you learned in a great career of doing this? Because when these people come, they're coming with very specific pains. And some dentists are like, no, the pain is bigger than just what's going on. You know, help us through that and help, you know, dispel some of the myths that go with that.
Again, great question. I was really kind of leery when I got into this because I thought that people were crazy because that's what we heard.
Right.
But I have to tell you, after doing this for 35 years, there's only a handful of patients who have problems north of the condyle. Okay. Most of them have legitimate issues, but they simply have not been diagnosed.
Right.
Again, I'm going to borrow a quote from Mark Piper. Mark says the most expensive thing a patient can do is not get diagnosed. And what I have seen is patients who have spent thousands of dollars and quite honestly, probably thousands of hours too, chasing after treatment that literally had no chance of being successful, but we didn't know that because we didn't see the joint anatomy. We have to do better at that. If I was a patient, I could understand their behavior. As I said earlier, patients want two things. They want answers and they want options. The problem is the crazy patients or the ones that keep going around aren't getting answers. Now, to be fair, there are some patients that have unrealistic expectations.
Right.
And you may see a little bit more of those when you see this type of practice. But honestly, I really don't think that's the case. And most of the ones that I see that have the more difficult cases that maybe have unrealistic expectations typically depend upon where they want to set their occlusion. But once we can figure out joint condition for the vast majority of patients, that solves the problem.
Yeah.
Now, they may not like the solution because it may be more complicated than they want to go through, and they may choose to live with what their problem is. But on the other hand, for the ones that really are looking for a solution and are ready to take the next step, it gives them an answer that they've been looking for many of them, almost their whole lives, when you see how young some of these problems start.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I want you to talk about what you guys are doing out at Spear Education. You guys have made a commitment and how treatment planning has changed. 35 years of treatment planning has been turned on its head. How so and why?
Well, you know, I have to credit Frank. You know, Frank Spear is really, I think, probably the most forward-thinking director of a teaching center that is out there today. I mean, it's real easy for teaching centers to become entrenched in what they believe. And therefore, that's the opinion that has to come out of the teaching center. And Frank has really looked at things and said, we need to progress. Frank brought Jeff in and he brought me in for the airway and the joint side of things. And really, as Frank has always said, quite frankly, there's always been aesthetics, function, structure, and biology. But if you listen to Frank, what he says is you're going to do that after you take care of emergency situations. You're going to take care of joint problems. You're going to take care of airway problems. So really, the traditional Spear treatment planning has been aesthetics, function, structure, and biology. We're just bringing what Frank said to the forefront with Jeff talking about airway and me talking about joints. So that's really how treatment planning has changed. And I, like I said, I have to credit Frank because I think he's opening up an entire new information source for young dentists who can really build a thriving practice with the concepts that, that he's bringing to dentistry.
Yeah, I can't help but think what you just said a few minutes ago, like thinking of it more as a systemic thing. Even with Tracy yesterday, she's like, inflammation. Like there's so many things that could be indicators of other things that patients experience. Dentists are better positioned now than ever to be a voice of reason and help patients become healthy for the future, don't you think?
Well, I absolutely do. And you know what? There's no one looking at the joints. There is absolutely no one looking at the joints. And again, the question is, who does that fall to in dentistry? We had a study club meeting last night at home. And one of the questions was, I don't understand why my orthodontists don't image the joints. And I'm gonna throw it a little different twist at it. Honestly, I think we've kind of hung orthodontists out to dry. And I think we need to support orthodontists better than we have in the past. I think that when you start to see these patients that may have a joint-based problem, instead of just sending them to the orthodontist to get the bite fixed, wouldn't it be great if we could take a look at their joints and then talk to the orthodontist about that before they start looking at how to move the teeth? And if we can do that, that starts to change things in a huge, huge, huge way. And it's in the patient's best interest. That's what I mean. You know, that's how you build a thriving referral practice. If you can solve patients' problems, they're going to send people to you. And the other side of the coin is dentists, again, as I said a few minutes ago, every dentist in your community is looking for someone to send these types of patients to. Become that person.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. I thought about in the complexity of this, that's an opportunity for somebody that understands this in a great way.
It's the most, I think, you talked about fee for service earlier. In my experience, it has been by far the best thing that has allowed me to have a fee for service practice. It was the thing that was the easiest to differentiate my practice because no one else was doing it.
Yeah.
Everyone else was doing, as I said, the aesthetics, the implants, the airway. Fine.
Yeah.
I'll do joints.
And you're my friend.
Send me your huddled masses. I'll take them.
I know. And you're my friend. So I can say this. When you said at the beginning of the podcast, like, I've never done any marketing. I mean, it's no joke. You and Bob Marges, I often joke, Bob didn't have a website for like years. I even question if he was really a dentist. He's like, no, I don't need all that because people come to me for a reason. And when because you were on last year and all this, every time I try to add something, I'm like, there's no information about Jim on the internet anywhere, but yet he's crazy successful, which just goes to speak like he doesn't need billboards and all this other stuff. People are seeking you out for a specific reason, which is really cool.
Well, and I said that's what I mean, though. No one's doing this, but it impacts so many cases.
Yeah.
If you think about occlusion, and I'm going to find, I'm going to assume that we're defining occlusion, not only how the teeth fit, but how the joints fit. It impacts aesthetic cases. It impacts restorative cases. It impacts airway cases. It impacts pain patients. What percentage of those are our patients? Right. I mean, that's getting close to 100%. Every patient is going to have an occlusal component in your practice. I just want to be able to recognize the ones that are the deep end of the pool cases. You know, I can swim in 10 feet of water, but I don't want to think I'm swimming in 1 foot of water and then I end up in 10 feet.
Yeah.
That's the real issue.
Absolutely. Now, I love this stuff. And again, you're just privy to a lot of conversations and it's anyone's guess. What's the future of occlusion look like? What can we expect to see in the next couple years on this topic in dentistry or digital dentistry or anything? Like, what do you think?
You're going to see imaging become more mainstream than it is already. At this time, there's already more dentist imaging joints than at any time in the past. You're going to start to see more CTs, more MRIs, and what you're going to start to realize, what the profession's going to start to realize, is that this is happening earlier than we think, and we need to be able to treat things early to try and limit the amount of structural damage to the joints. For the adult patients who already have it, we're going to realize that we have to have a different prognosis discussion with those patients based upon the condition of their joints. It's no fun to have a restorative case that all of a sudden goes south after 2 years because there's changes at the joints. You know, the old saying is before is an explanation, after is an excuse. What we're going to learn is we're going to give explanations so we don't have to give excuses. That's, I think, what we're going to see.
Yeah, this is so awesome. I'm going to have you back again and again and again. But
love it.
I want people that are watching or listening, if they haven't been to Spearcation, what are you doing? What do you teach out there? How does it work? And what course are you teaching? And I want them to check it out.
I am doing two courses now. I do the occlusion seminar course. Frank Spear, Greg Kinzer, and myself, we teach that. It's kind of fun. We've been doing that for 4 years now. And what I did, I took the most common questions that we've gotten over the 4 years and I formatted a lecture out of those. So it's a neat presentation. So we teach that. That's virtual this year. And we're hoping to get back live next year. And then I also teach the Advanced Occlusion Workshop. So there's the occlusion seminar, there's the occlusion workshop, and that's primarily designed to help dentists gain confidence in the easier cases. So it's some of the more basics, how to mount models, how to look at bites, how to do an equilibration, how to think about looking at cases. The Advanced Occlusion Workshop is for the patients that don't have disc coverage completely on the condyle. There's a lot of those that have it. So we talk a little bit more about imaging those cases. We do a lot of treatment planning and we do a lot of verbal skills. When I have gone to CE as a young dentist, I was always looking to implement. So it's a 3-day workshop. The entire last afternoon is implementation. forms, verbiage, how do you set your fees, how do you handle insurance, all the stuff so you can go back and really start to implement this in your practice. Because when I look back at my career in dentistry, the greatest return on investment of any money that I've ever been fortunate enough to be able to invest has been in dental education. I mean, it's changed my life. I want this course to be something that patients can go home and change their practices with. So it's 3 days. It's a fun course. It's paced nicely. Like I said, there's a lot of hands-on. There's a lot of treatment planning. It's looking at cases that you see every day in your practice. So we'd love to have you come out. And again, there's so many other things at Spear that are really taught well, but this is one direction that we've decided to move in at Spear. We also have stuff online, but those are the two seminars, or the seminar and the workshop that I'm involved with now.
Yeah, you got to check it out. It's speareducation.com. Never begrudge the money you spend on your own personal education. Yeah. It's at least tenfold what you get back. On top of it, you get the fire back in your belly and excited.
No doubt.
And now you can start to see, look, I'm not alone. Like, you guys all deal with this too. Like, you know, it's kind of nice because dentistry can be isolating at times without a good community around you.
I totally agree. And, you know, I really believe that's the importance. I said we had a study club meeting last night. I kind of think of continuing education in two ways. You know, when I was going to Dawson, I was going to Pankey, I was going out to hear Frank Spear, you know, we had John Koistor study clubs. I was trying to listen to all the best teachers in dentistry. So you have to get that to expand your vision and to open your eyes to what's out there. But then I also think you need something to implement. So study clubs are great for that. Workshops are great for that. So I think you need continuing education, but I think you need different types of continuing education to really make it gel in your practice.
Amen, brother. I can't thank you enough. I'm going to have you back again and again and again. And if you guys ever get a chance to see Jim McKee or have him to your study club, and I know, you know, you shared with me, you were out to see Drew McDonald. Like, you're in a good position now where you can go visit people. So if you're looking for a great
it's an awesome time.
Yeah. Make sure you get Jim come to your study club. He'll blow your mind and get you excited about seeing it a little bit differently. So thank you, my friend. I am always grateful for our relationship your encouragement along the way, even when I was terrified about all of this. But thank you.
Well, we were all terrified back then, I think.
Tell me about it. Awesome. Well, stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. Thank you guys for joining in today. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see, whether it be from Jim or any of the other team out at Spear Education. I'll have Jim line them all up, and we'll be back here again and again and again, just give you great things to think about. So until we see you guys next time, keep watching The Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching The Best Practices Show.